And what I've been asked to do, tonight is to look at the Haftarah that we just laned on Shabbos, which is the Haftarah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, which is the last chapter of Isaiah, chapter 66. Now, in an art scroll, stone chumash, you will find that on page 1208. If you are using an art scroll Tanakh, you will find it on page 1067. And if you have a Mikras Gedolus, which is just like a Tanakh, a standard Tanakh, like this, then you would just turn to the very last perek of Isaiah. So Leon, I can see you've got a Tanakh there. You will be able to find it, hopefully, on page 1067. I think 1067 is essentially, it's the last chapter. Oh, you've got Rabbi David Feinstein's Kol Doidi of the Haftarah. Wow, that looks amazing. And then, you've got a Tikkun. I don't know where it will be in there. If it's in there, I don't know that you'll find it in a Tikkun. You'll need a Tanakh, not a Tikkun. But it's the last perek of Isaiah. And I'd like to go through it with you because there's a tremendous amount of data. And you've got to understand, this was read on Parshas Tazria Metzaira, which happens to be the parshas where people sit at home in self-isolation dealing with a plague. How interesting. And in the Haftarah, which is the last perek of Isaiah, it happens to talk about this and where it comes from. And it is so apropos, it is so correct, it's so shayach, it's so appropriate, it's so fitting that it's happening at this time. It would be wrong not to discuss it and try to get some lessons of the meanings of what's going on. So without further ado, is that okay? Is everyone okay with that? So whether or not you're following along, what I'm going to do is just kind of start reading out some concepts as to what's going on here. So it's the Haftarah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, which is Isaiah, which is chapter 66, and it's verses 1 through 24. And it's the first verse of that chapter, all the way through to the end of the book of Isaiah. Now, I'd like to point out, for those who did my Derech Hashem course, where we talked about prophecy, the greatest prophet that ever lived was Moses. The second greatest prophet that ever lived was Isaiah. Only Isaiah and Moses had a real clear grasp of the data that was transmitted to them. That's one of the sources that we looked at in Derech Hashem. The next greatest prophet after Moses was Isaiah. In fact, I say in Derech Hashem, it's not even fair to bunch Moshe Rabbeinu along with anyone else because he was completely different. He was on a completely normal level. The greatest of all the regular prophets was Isaiah. Moses was a different league. It was like jumping to like a different Premier League. He was at the very, very top league and there was only one person in it. It's not fair to bunch him along with the other prophets, and it's not fair to bunch other prophets along with Moshe Rabbeinu. So the greatest of all the regular grand prophets was Isaiah. No one had a more voluminous, detailed vision of the events than Isaiah, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, who was a different league. He saw things in a different way to anyone else, as we discussed at great length when we did the chapter of Moshe as prophet, which is the last chapter in the third section of Derech Hashem. See online courses for more detail. But that's important because what we're talking about is an incredibly clear prophecy. Now, what's going on with Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? Why do we get a special laning of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? What's going on? It's very important. There's a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph, Omed Aleph, that's 31a, that says that if Rosh Chodesh falls on Shabbos, that we are to recite this particular last chapter because it's called Hashemayim Kiseh, because it contains the verse in 66:23 that says it will come to pass that every Rosh Chodesh and every Shabbos, all of mankind will come and bow before me, so says Hashem. Now, what does that mean? That means that in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, the Gentiles will have Chagim. The Gentiles, the non-Jews, will celebrate festivals. What will their festivals be? Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh. We'll learn out as well, Sukkos. They'll come as well. Their big thing is Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and Sukkos. What's going on? It's like this. Why do we keep Shabbos? As we've been discussing at great length through our Tfilah Shir on Shabbos that we've just recently done. When we proclaim our belief in Hashem as the creator of the universe, we know that he worked for 6 days and rested on the seventh. That's why we have a 6 day work week and a 1 day Sabbath. And that expresses that fundamental concept that God is creator of the universe. Rosh Chodesh is a time where the moon seems renewed. And that is also a reminder of the original act of creation. That everything is on a cycle and there's a system that's at work. So Rosh Chodesh is a monthly holiday. And Shabbos is like a weekly holiday. Indeed, in the old days, did you know on Rosh Chodesh that in the times of the temple, everyone would stop work, they'll take a day off, and they'd go hear public shiurim in Torah, especially from a Navi. In the times of the prophets, people say, oh wow, it's Rosh Chodesh tomorrow. And they'd go, they'd take a day off, and they'd go and they'd hear a shiur given by a Navi. Public lectures. And the Navi would stand and he would speak and everyone would listen. Amazing. In the future, La'asid Lava, in days to come, in Olam Haba, Rosh Chodesh will be even more important. Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are going to be global Kiddush Hashem days, where everyone's going to come to the Beis HaMikdash and will want to hear inspiring words of Torah. And it'll be Jew and Gentile. The Gentiles will especially take on Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, where these two concepts coalesce, which is not so common. I don't know how many times it is. It's not, it's like, I don't know how many times every few months you get a Shabbos Rosh Chodesh that coalesces. That'll be a big time for Goyim to get in their aircraft and planes, whatever. They'll get to the Beis HaMikdash. They're going to want to be there because there's like a synergy, an alignment of both Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh, which would be Chagim anyway. So we need to understand the fact of that it's a very chosh of a time. Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh is a very chosh of time. So much so it'll become one of the biggest Chagim internationally in the world to come. Really, like, bigger than Yom Tov. It'll be a whole worldwide thing. All the goyim that are alive, all the Jews alive, would have been in Jerusalem. It's a big day. It's Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. While we're talking about that, the prophet starts chiding Klal Yisrael. And Hashem points out in the beginning of the Nevuah that the whole world belongs to him. He's made the whole world. But what does he want? You should know, in the time of Yeshaya, people thought God did not want korbanos. Listen to these words. Read Isaiah 66:3. Verse 3. He who slaughters an ox is as if he slays a man. He's like a murderer. He who offers a sheep is as if he breaks a dog's neck. He who brings up a meal offering is as if he offers a pig's blood, which is obviously detestable. One who brings a frankincense remembrance, a beautiful smell, is as if he brings a gift of extortion. They have even chosen their ways and their souls have desired their abominations. Now, if you hear a prophet telling you this, you're probably going to get the idea that Hashem is not interested in kabbalas. I mean, listen to the words. You want to give a korban mincha? It's like you're offering up pig's blood. Whoa, that's a bit intense. What about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has written in the Torah that he wants the kabbalas? The answer's like this. In the time of Isaiah, which is amazing, people were offering kabbalas offerings as a sin tax. Ah, you sin today. Don't worry about it. You give a korban, you pay your tax, and you can carry on. God will forgive you. He's very kind. Also, they were turning up, going through the motions without in any way thinking about what they were doing. Very difficult for us to say that. We're talking about people who were very, very great in that. But they would, I want to say, please, I'm going to say something which I don't want it to be controversial. I don't want it to be critical. But try to understand it in our days of understanding. You turn up to shul, you just go through the motions, you have a muttl, you have a bit of a club talk, but you don't for a second think about you're in the presence of Hashem and that you're there to daven with kavana. You just turn up, you're a good boy, you turn up, you went to shul tonight, you had a bit of a daven, then you spoke with your mates, you didn't really think very hard during tefillah. You've basically got there but missed the point. In the days of the Navi, people were doing two things. They were turning up to the Beis HaMikdash giving kabbonis, but they were not doing so with the proper intention, just going through the motion, fulfilling their obligations. And two, they were even treating it as a, you know what? You broke Shabbos, you give a bull, you know what I mean? It's not a big deal. God is saying, if you're going to turn up and give kabbonis like that, I'd rather you don't turn up. That's why it says in verse 2, which introduced this, verse 2, the second verse, my hand made all these, that's the universe, and thus they came into being the words of Hashem, but it is to this that I look, to the poor and broken-spirited person who is zealous regarding my word. That's what he's really after. He's really after people who are willing to do his rotson, irrelevant of the fact that, you know, how much they're spending, how they're getting there, that they've got to meet or they've got to keep up with the Joneses. Everyone will be there. They're coming with totally pure spirit. That's what Hashem is after. He's after people doing the right thing. Not just keeping Judaism by rote. That's extremely important to him. So much so, if you do Judaism by rote alone, he would prefer you don't turn up. He's saying, I'd rather you're not there than do it the way you're doing it. And so much so, he left. The Shekhinah left the Beis HaMikdash. He says, if you're going to keep turning up doing it like that, I'm off. Verse 4. I too will choose to mock them. And what they dread, I will bring upon them. As a direct result of being lackadaisical in your thought process, in your emotional commitment to God, God will strike you with afflictions. This is the natural outcome in the system of messing God about. In Parshas Bechukai, in the Teichacha, in the admonition, God says, if you're casual with me, I respond to you with a fury of casualness. If you're casual with me, what's God's casualness? That's him appearing only to be natural. He just turns up as if it's natural. It's interesting, in Yeshaya earlier on, there is a kasiv kri, where the word echad is pronounced achas. Now the word echad is male, and the word achas is female, both for one. Rabbi Julius Hirsch says, achas is the way you say it. Achas is mother nature, the goddess that people relate to when they talk about nature. Notice they always say it's mother nature. They never say father nature. A mother is weak. She's a female. But it's written echad. Really, it's God hiding in nature. But people call God mother nature. If you are casual with him, he'll, as it were, relate to you in a way that you think it's mother nature. It's just a natural happenstance. Chance event. That's how he relates to you if you aren't on the ball with you relating to him the way that Isaiah is saying in verse 3. This is natural. This is how he does business. This is his response to us. Listen to the word of Hashem, those who are zealous regarding his word. Your brethren who hate you and distance themselves from you say, Hashem is glorified because of my reputation. But we shall see your gladness and they will be shamed. Yeshaya is now starting to talk about what's going to happen, la'asid lavoi, in the world to come. It's a very interesting thing. There's a beautiful medrash which explains on Samach Vav Dalet, which I've just read to you, 66:4, says that Hashem will deliberately heap ridicule, and what they fear the most of, he'll put on them measure for measure. Because it's a fundamental principle. The human beings choose their own ways through Bechira. Because no human being is compelled to obey his instinct blindly. Each person has the ability to be able to choose whether or not they're going to become a tzaddik or a rasha. Kol bidei shemayim, chutz yira shemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for your fear of heaven. So what's going to happen is, though, are you okay? Just a second. So Asher, you want to say something?
Yes. As you overloading it, I think when you get near the mic, you get muted. I don't hear you for a few seconds.
You can't hear, okay.
And then you come back.
All right. I'll see what I can do. Okay. So it's like this. Hashem is saying like this, you're going to have an option as to how you're going to deal with me. If you choose to do the right thing, la'asid lavo in olam haba, these verses now point to olam haba, I am going to make you very highly honored. But if you choose to be deceitful with me and play a system, I'll heap ridicule upon you. Just like you're ridiculing me and turning me into some kind of toy that you use when you need me. Very interesting. Coming back to our verses, it says an interesting thing. On verse 7, Hashem starts comparing the coming of the Messiah to a birth that a woman is undergoing through labor. We may have heard the concept of birth pangs of the Messiah. That comes from this Haftarah. Let's look at these words. Verse 7, 66:7. When she has not yet felt labour, she will have given birth. When the pain has not yet come to her, she will have delivered a son. Who has heard of such a thing? Who has seen its like? Has a land gone through its labour in one day? Has a nation been born at one time? As Zion went through labour and gave birth to her children? Shall I bring a woman to the birth stool and not have her give birth? Says Hashem, shall I, who causes birth, hold it back, says your God. What's going on here? What's he talking about? This is we're going to see how this is all going to tie into what we're going through now. It's unbelievable. According to this, in verse 6, it seems that the labor pains Israel will suffer prior to the Messiah will be short and insignificant. Soon as you know it, the Mashiach has come. Our sages explain that Mashiach can come in one of two ways, and we've discussed this over and over again in the Tefillah Shir, and we've mentioned it as well in the Derech Hashem Shirim. There's two ways the Messiah can come. The Messiah can come because the Jews are worthy, and that they will bring the Messianic redemption, as it were, early, before the end time. Worst case scenario, the Messiah will come because God has to call it quits on how bad things are getting. And the last date for that is 6093. 6093, as we've discussed. 6093 is Isis to Rabbi Akiva, Parshas Veschanan, where we learn out the number of prayers Moses uttered on the last day of his life. And if you add that up, we know that the end is 6093, which means Erev Rosh Hashanah, 6000. People who don't know this will be jumping up and down going, this is the year of the Messiah. The truth is, there could be another century to wait. Now, it'll happen like that if the Jews are not worthy of redemption earlier and God forces the Jews to do teshuvah. What these verses are talking about, a quick and easy birth, are if the Jews cause the Messianic redemption to come early. If our behavior ups the game, where in our merit the Messiah will come, it's like an easy labor. A bada bing, as soon as you're there, two Shabbosos in, you're good to go, Mashiach is coming. It'd be like literally overnight. Alternatively, you're going to have to wait the long haul to 6093. And when it comes, it'll be a completely natural event. It's in your hands what shape you're going to be in as and when that happens. That's down to you. It's going to happen. A birth is going to occur. The question is, how is it going to occur? Easy or tough? Isaiah is pointing now to the fact it could be easy if you bring the Mashiach. When it says, who has ever heard of such a thing? Who has ever seen anything like it? Did a woman ever bear so many offspring in one day to fill the earth? This alludes to none other than Techias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead. In the future resurrection, entire nations will be reborn in one day as God resurrects them. Since that's very difficult to visualize for us, look at verse 9. Will I then bring a woman to labor to the birth stool and not let her give birth? So says Hashem, I'll cause a woman to give birth. What does that mean? What's birth? Birth is pain. The pain before the baby comes out, right? In our analogy, The pain before a baby comes is our current exile. The exile we're in are the labor pains we're experiencing. God is saying, has anyone ever, would I be so cruel to cause a woman pain and then not give her a baby at the end? God is saying like this, I'm causing the exile. I'm only doing that because I'm going to bring Mashiach. I'm not just going to let you go through labor of exile and then not give you the kid at the end. I will do it for you. Would you think I'm cruel? You think I'm going to exile you and have you go through pain and hardship for no purpose? Of course you'll have a kid. You'll have a Mashiach. If you find yourself in a distressing situation, realize it's Hashem that's put you in that situation and that he's the one that's going to get you out of it. Just like he brings labor upon a woman and rewards her at the end with a child. That's your own personal exile, your own personal issues, and it's the national exile as well. Very important. I'd like now to jump to verse 66, 6, 15, 15. If you look at verse 15, things start to really heat up. It says, for behold, Hashem will arrive in fire and his chariots like tornadoes to requite his anger with wrath and his rebuke with flaming fire. For with fire, Hashem will judge, and with his sword against all flesh, many will be those slain by Hashem. What's going on? We're talking here of Gog and Magog. This is what the Pesikta, the Ralbag, and the Radbaz all say, that this is what's talking about. What does it mean Hashem will dispense judgment by fire? He's going to rebuke flesh with swords. Basically, it's talking about the enemies of Israel, Gog and Magog, who will rebel against Hashem. But you can also understand the verse telling us that Hashem will punish with the fires of Gehenna those Gentiles who killed Klal Yisrael. Very interesting concept. According to this interpretation, it refers to the vast number of Jews who were slain throughout all the generations for their belief in Hashem. How many people have died as Jews, giving up their lives for no other reason but they were Jews? The reason the Gentiles hated them was they were Jewish. And the Jews died because of that. How many times has that happened in human history? Uncountable millions. It's ridiculous. Notice, we're going to learn, La'asid Lavoi, many Gentiles that are resurrected will be stricken with psoriasis, with the same psoriasis kind of lesions that we're learning about. When you get stricken with psoriasis, you're considered impure. You have to be outside the camp. Midah keneged midah, measure for measure, Hashem will make the Gentiles dirty for thousands of years of calling Jews filthy. Hashem has stacked up like a coin in a tzedakah box every time a Jew was called a filthy Jew. Have you ever been called a filthy Jew? I have. Walking down the street, guys shout to me, filthy Jew. Why filthy? Are Jews more filthy than other people? No. Hashem took that as a personal insult to his ambassador. Measure for measure, he will strike those that say that with saras, causing them spiritual filth. Look at verse 17. This is unbelievable. Look at this. You read this, it's like reading the news. Those who prepare and purify themselves to storm the gardens. That's Israel, the Jews in the garden is Israel. Go one after another to the midst of the fray. Together they'll be consumed. Hashem will be as angry with those people as he is with the people he's about to list. Here's people God's really angry with. They'll be consumed like those who eat the flesh of swine, of abominable creatures, which we know are lizards and reptiles and rodents. What really gets on Hashem's nerves? People, Gentiles, that eat rodents and lizards when they're not meant to. Gentiles are not allowed to eat certain creatures, and they're certainly not allowed to eat them when they are alive. For a Gentile to eat a creature while it's alive is considered detestable and abominable for the Gentile. If a Gentile eats live rodents and lizards and snakes and reptiles, that is considered unimaginably disgusting to God. And God says, I'll punish those who go after my children from the source of this abomination, which is the eating of live rodents. Wuhan Street Market was well known for selling live scorpions, baby rodents, live that were wriggling, and selling them in salads, in noodles. And people would eat these baby rats. And there's videos of men and women in China showing you them chewing on live baby rats. From there, his plague will come. He says it right here. When you want me to be casual with you and send a completely casual plague, you know where I'm going to send it from? The place where they eat animals like that. That's what I'll do. And I've got news for you. It will seem natural. Because you've been natural with me, I'll be natural with you. You don't want to fight to see me and work hard to turn up to the base of Migdush with all the right kavanas, to shul with all the right kavanas, to the base of Medrash to search for me. You're not going to do it? Then I've got news for you. You shouldn't come. Just like in the days of Isaiah, they were saying, don't go to the base of Migdush. God does not want kavanas. In our day, Raboisai, in our day, Hashem doesn't want us at shul. You can stay home. If you're going to go to shul and have a laugh and treat the place like a club rather than a house of God in exile with no prerequisite respect, and while you're there, you're not utilizing it as a hallowed place to reach the divine, then you don't have to be there. Stay at home. That's exactly what Isaiah just said on verses 3-4. I'd rather send a plague from a place where people eat abominable creatures and you stay at home, then I let you turn up to my sanctuary and misuse it. I've had enough, says God. I've had enough. When this thing first broke out, I got so many emails, so many calls from so many people. It's Mashiach. Mashiach is coming. Mashiach will save us. It's just the opposite. We've behaved in a way where Hashem is secluding us away to realize how it is we should rejoin him. It's not the Messiah which is going to save us from this. If we use this experience correctly, then we could be more meritorious to receive the Messiah. I'd like to point out, in South Korea, this plague is over. They've all gone back to work. The streets are full. Restaurants are bustling. Town squares are populated. And the Messiah has as yet not come. You would have heard about it. But it didn't happen. Could this be utilized to bring us closer? Absolutely. But that's completely down to you. Which is exactly what he says in verses 1 through 2. It's down to you. What I'm after is a broken spirit. Someone zealous regarding my word. And I've got news for you. I've got people turning up. Not seeking me in the places they're meant to seek me. They're not thinking about me. They're not loving me the way that I want. But if they do, I'm only too happy to bring them back. And if they do, I'll bring the Messiah in a quick and easy birth. 1, 2, 3. As soon as the labour comes in, you've got yourself a kid. At the end of days, the Ralbag says, you've got to hear this. It's worth turning up to this year to hear this. At the end of days, the Ralbag brings a medrash. Bamidbar Rabba and a Tanchuma on Parsha Shmini. And he says as follows. Gentiles will claim reward from Hashem, just like the Jews. It's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah 2b. And Hashem will repudiate their demand. What will he say? Listen to the words that he'll say. Only people who never ate loathsome creeping animals are entitled to a reward. He says that to Gentiles. There's a level of kashrus a Gentile must also aspire to. Did you know, I've worked with a lot of B'nai Noach, Noachide Jews in America, Central America. Central Northern America, Oklahoma, Alabama, the central states. They eat kosher food, they don't eat kosher meat because they can't get Noachide kashrus, which is a lower level than... But they can eat Jewish rabbinic kashrus. So they end up eating kosher meat only. They don't eat treif because they have to have meat which is slaughtered in accordance with Noahide laws. And the Gentile abattoirs do not do that. But the Jewish abattoir is good enough, bidyeved. Why the swine and the rodent? They're specified because they are particularly disgusting, even though a Jew is equally forbidden to eat every other non-kosher animal. The verse also is responding to Rishayim within the Jewish people and saying, if they purify themselves, they appear righteous. But in the privacy of their own home, they eat forbidden foods of reptiles, of mice, and they indulge in their hedonistic lusts, especially with marital relation issues. So Hashem says, no reward. You've got to be on board for me. The Torah was only given to help man overcome his basal urges and approach the divine. Eliyahu Hanavi was once walking down the street and he bumped into Rav Naharai. Rav Naharai asked Eliyahu Navi a question. And he said, Rebbe, if it says in Isaiah 66:16-17, that reptiles are disgusting creatures, why did he make them? Good question, no? If you didn't like them so much, just don't make them. Said Eliyahu Hanavi, back to Rav Naharai, if Hashem looks at these creatures and says, if I'm going to the trouble of sustaining disgusting creatures which no one really needs, sustaining disgusting, don't need them, and Jews don't eat them because both of them shouldn't eat them, how much more so must I continue to sustain human beings who are necessary for the functioning of the world? So that's what it means that sometimes when humans aren't worthy, Hashem looks to the animals and spares us in their merit. They've not done anything wrong. They're being sustained to show humans that they're worthy. And God is saying, look, if I'm bothering with them, I've got to bother with humans for sure. So sometimes it's in the merit of animals we survive. That as Naam Latoya brings that and says, sometimes it's in the merit of the animals that Hashem will say, I'll let the humans live. Amazing. There's so much here. Look at 66:24. Coming up to the end of the Haftarah. It says, and they shall go out, and they shall see the corpses of those who rebel against me, for their worms will not die, and their fire will not go out, and they shall be a disgrace for all flesh. And it shall be that from the new moon to the new moon, Rosh Chodesh to Rosh Chodesh, and from Shabbos to Shabbos, all flesh, Jew and Gentile, shall come and prostrate themselves before me, says Hashem. Non-Jews will come to bow to Hashem, will go out from Yerushalayim to all the areas in Israel, and they'll see the corpses of the willful sinners who died in the war of Gog and Magog strewn across the streets. And the worms that come to eat the corpses will not perish. Hashem will keep those worms alive to eat up their corpses more and more and more. So before being buried, those corpses will be eaten by blowfly larvae and caterpillars and maggots. But on a deeper level, it continues to the fire will not go out in Gehenna for such people. It's a very interesting thing that the ultimate goal of creation is that not only the Jewish people, but all flesh. Notice the words. God didn't say all flesh. All flesh, kol basar, all humanity will bow to him and submit to his will and recognize him as a creator. Right now, we are in an awesome crossroads that we can utilize either way. You can say, look, there is a novel coronavirus which has popped up, as these things do from time to time, causing an international plague. And these things can happen. Whatever. Whatever. And then things will go back to normal, and it doesn't matter. It's interesting that when the flood occurred, the flood occurred in the Hebrew year of 1656. Every 1656 years after the flood, they used to make their houses on stilts because they said it's a natural thing that every 1656 years there's a flood. It's a natural occurrence. Forget the fact that God was wiping out all flesh for their behavior. One word that has not been mentioned by anyone in any media outlet is the word God. It's the dirtiest word in the media. Science will get us through and science will save us. That's one way of seeing this. If you're casual with me, I'm casual with you. Another way of seeing this is as a direct retribution for casual behavior with Hashem coming from the place which is the most detestable of dietary habits. The very place where Hashem says, that's the place where I send these things from. If I want to let you know how much I want you to retune with me, I'll send you a plague from there, from the streets of Wuhan. And what will it do? It'll shut all synagogues in the world. Who'd have thought? There's some bloke eating a mouse on the street in China is going to end up shutting every synagogue on earth. Is that not from Hashem? You think he's got nothing to do with that? When he keeps his own children away from his own house? Well, he's got nothing to say about that? Here's what you got to think about. What are you meant to be mechaven? What are you meant to think about when you get back to normal? Oh, well, thank God that's over. Will you still be crying out for Mashiach when it's over? Hopefully Mashiach will save it. Why should you? You've got no reason to, right? People only tend to cry for Mashiach when they feel as if they're in shtuch. You should be crying out for Mashiach with the same gusto every day of your life. One of the questions you get asked after 120 is, did you await the Messiah? You can't say, well, in the COVID-19 pandemic I did. You've got to say it's every day. There's no difference, COVID-19 or not COVID-19. The key's like this. Hashem wants us to approach him with sincerity, with the desire to want to know him and change our relationship to him, not live Judaism by rote. Judaism by rote is dangerous. It happened in the times of Isaiah. It's happened since. It's happening to a certain extent now, where people are just lackadaisical with their Judaism. They just do it. It's like another thing in their lives. Judaism demands 100% total desire for commitment. And if you don't do it, God gets involved. Because we're different. Because our role is different. And Hashem set us aside for an ambassadorship, which is now necessary for all humanity. And if we don't get it right, all humanity loses. It's on our shoulders. It's our responsibility. How does Hashem deal with us? Like, wake up, hello, you're not going to come to shul? You don't have to come to shul. Isaiah says, don't turn up to the Beis HaMikdash. Better you don't do it. Stay at home. Read this in the week of the pandemic on the parsha of self-isolation. And remember, it was Isaiah in chapter 26:20. 26:20. If you have a look in Isaiah 26:20. Chapter 26, verse 20. Go, my people, enter your rooms and close your door behind you. Hide for a brief moment until the wrath has passed. For behold, Hashem is going forth from his place to bring punishment for the sin of the inhabitants of the world, and the land reveal its blood and no longer cover over its slain. On that day, Hashem will bring punishment with his harsh, great, mighty sword. If you're not going to sort it out, I'll sort it out, says Hashem. I prefer not to have to do this. I prefer you do this. But if you don't do it, I'm not going to just let it slide. Hashem has not forgiven and forgone and just given up on his world. Ugh, you know, whatever, it's a project. I couldn't be bothered with it anymore. I'll do something else. No, he made an oath to Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov that he's going to sort this out. And he's good to pay up. He's not going to let go. If we're slipping, so we'll get reminded. We could use this as a messianic moment. We could really change, remind ourselves of what it is we have to do, and get back onto our relationship level on track. Or you could use this as another kind of moment where just a natural attitude, like anything else, these things come and go, and that puts us also on a messianic track, but a different track. That's a messianic track where it doesn't come till 6093. You can choose. It's down to you. What happens in the world is God's doing. How you deal with it is your doing. If you take to heart the message, You can change it to a different position. If you don't take to heart the message, then it becomes like an on-track natural thing, which is also organized in a different way. All this is in the Haftira, while we have to sit at home contemplating this in isolation. Is that a coincidence? Could be. Probably isn't, though. There's a lot for us to contemplate while we're in isolation. That's what the Messiah is meant to do. He's meant to think, how did I get myself into such a situation that I've got to be in isolation? Then he does tshuva, then he's purified, then he can come out. So it's not so much the isolation, it's what you achieve by good isolation, who you are when you come out. It's not the isolation which is important. It's what it does for you. This is an amazing time. We've never known it in our lifetimes to be like this, in such an unbelievable situation. The question is, is it purely Al Pi Teva, or what do I have to get out of it? I very much hope that each one of you is able to gain what you can for the betterment of your own personal, individual relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that you realign and reassess, in Yeshaya's words, what he's after. A broken spirit, zealous to do Hashem's will, not haughty and gaivadik. These are things which are very difficult to achieve, and which we're getting a tap on the shoulder about this. Each individual now has to do it personally. We can't do it communally, because there is no communal activity. I hope that this has been somewhat beneficial, and that we can see the word of a Navim on the Parsha in a way which is so applicable to current events that it's difficult to ignore it. If there's any questions, I'm willing to hear them at all, I'm happy to discuss it. And now's a good time. Is there anyone that wants to ask anything?
Amazing. Rabbi?
Yes, Clive.
So is COVID-19, you've said in the past that things happen because of its effect on the Jews of the world. So is COVID-19 brought to the world basically to get the Jews to be better in shul and other things?
If the Gentiles would have been behaving in a more appropriate manner and not abominably in a godless country eating animals with the cries of the suffering of the animals going to heaven, different tools would have been used to inspire the Jews to come back to him. There's much more complicated relationship here between Jew and Gentile going on. Jews did not start COVID-19. But now that this is happening, it is there telling the Jews, you better wake up. If it wasn't this, it would be something very different. If the Gentiles were all eating in an impeccable manner, it wouldn't have been like this. But the only reason the Gentiles would be eating in a more impeccable manner is if we were a better light to the nations. There's a relationship between us and the Gentiles, and a relationship between us and Hashem, and a relationship between us and each other. And we need to up the game on all three of those. And it's these cataclysmic moments which remind us that we have a national responsibility, an international responsibility, and a spiritual responsibility. We are Jews. We were taken out of Egypt for a mission. We all stem from Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Hashem has got a plan for us. He ain't given up on you, even if you've given up on him. COVID-19 is the situation we find ourselves in based upon a multitude of outcomes of Jews between Jews, Jews between Gentiles, and Jews between God. It's a global situation. How could it be they could do such a thing? Drinking live snakes' blood. They slit snakes down the middle and drink their blood as an aphrodisiac and strength potion for good luck in the street? How can they do that? Because the world is more godless. How can it be godless? There's 13 million Jews. 13 million Jews. All whose job it is to tell the world about God. Only 1/5 is Shomer Shabbos. The Board of Jewish Deputies did a census. They found that only 18% of UK Jews refrained from turning on and off lights on the Saturday. 18%. That's just about 1/5. 1/5 of the Jews were redeemed from Egypt. There is a direct link between Torah observance and world happening. Now, the Gentiles blame us both ways. They'll say the Jews are controlling the world, or the Jews are meaningless. They're subhuman. They're not even human at all, said the Nazis. They're like rats. And yet they're the people of the book. They're the chosen people. If they're the chosen people, we'll hate them. If they're subhuman, we hate them. We can't win.
Can't win.
You can't win. Only Jews are seen to be on both sides of evil. Either we're all the capitalist bankers or all the leftist Marxists. You can't win. You can't move to one side to avoid it. Jews only get to be good if they get to do their job, and that's to have a better relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. If it doesn't work out, it leads to problems. It always has, and it always will. From Egypt to Babylonia to Persia to Media to Chaldea to Greece to Rome and to Yishmael. It's always been the same thing. It's in the Haftarah. It's in the Torah. It's in the news. And it's now on Zoom. But you can posh it, choose to ignore the whole lot. It's incredible. It's just unbelievable. The whole situation.
Why is it? I mean, it's a shame that so few of our rabbis are letting us know this.
Oh, I don't know, but I think rabbis are. I don't know what to tell. I'm not a speaker for all the rabbinate, and I've not been assigned by. There's no actual central rabbinate organization actually that you know goes across all the different degrees. It doesn't work like that. The Haftarah is speaking to us, Rabbi Sai. The Haftarah was read instead of the Torah. We didn't used to read the Torah. We weren't allowed to. We only laid the Haftarah on Shabbos. The Haftarah speaks to us.
But Rabbi, what you've been saying is that even those Jews that keep the Torah, that go to shul, that basically try and keep things, are to fault, and that's why it's them who are being told not to come to shul.
We're not saying it's like this. There's a blanket. There's a lot of different strands of Judaism. A lot of people can turn up to shul and talk about football during the repetition of the Shemona Esrei. They talk during Kriyas Atayra and Laning. If they're there, they're not utilizing it as a focus to get close to Hashem. That's all different branches of United Synagogue Jewry, Federation Jewry, Haredi Jewry. Everyone has what to work on. No one should be complacent. No one can turn around and say, we're the Spitz. We've got it right. We're the best. Do it like us. No. There's work to be done wherever you're standing. Whoever you are, you can always improve. If you turn up once a week on Shabbos or once a year to Yom Kippur, and while you're there, all you do is talk or do security, your relationship is remiss. If you turn up 3 times a day, but you hang out drinking tea, schmoozing business with your friend, you're amiss. But you're at least there 3 times a day. All those Jews have had their synagogue shut. Non-discriminatory. Everyone needs to up a level. If you're turning up once a year to Yom Kippur, you need to turn up once a year and actually daven. If you're turning up three times a day, you need to push the boat out three times a day. Everyone's got to take from this experience. Everyone. On their level, everyone's got... My suggestion to you is, take one mitzvah and up your game at it. If you check your mitzvahs every 7 years, check them every 3.5. Be machmir. If you really check your mezuzahs every 3.5, check your tefillin every 3.5. If you've already had your tefillin checked, do something else in your house. Increase your level of kashrus.
Mitch, can I come in?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
This is a tough one. So this it's not a why, it's an asking of your thoughts on this. We've lost some leaders. I know you were very close with Rabbi Westheim. It's hard to get a message. What are you taking? Tell me what you would take from that when we're losing our big players.
It's like this.
Why the big players? You know what the question is. What do we take from that? We've lost a good few big rub on him, you know. But we can safely say Tzaddikim, safely.
Yeah.
What do we do with that?
The Sukkos David, Rav David Kviat, explains how the death of the righteous acts as an atonement. In heaven, the death of a righteous man is like a korban. Why is that? The answer is, it depends how much you cry about it. If you cry over the loss of righteousness in the world, it's a sign that heaven has got it going good. If a great tzaddik is lost and everyone's like, oh well, there's another beady weedy who just sat down shining his pants learning all day, not the world's greatest loss. That means that humanity has misaligned the truth of what its role is. If we value the tzaddikim and we're sad for their passing, it means what you're really being sad about is the loss of that channel to Hashem. And that's worth crying about. If you're really being willing, a man especially, who finds it more difficult to cry than a woman, to actually shed tears over lost bridges to the Bora Olam, that's what actually affects the Korban, says the Sukkos David. It's the pain that you feel of the loss of another God channel in the world. Listen to me very carefully if I tell you what the Akedah Yitzhak says about Avraham Avinu's pain of the Akedah. You've got to hear this because it's one of the most important things I can tell you. Avraham Avinu was slaughtering Isaac and he had the knife up against his neck and he was crying tears. And his tears fell and he was literally in a very highly emotionalized state. And of course it's because he's slaughtering his son, right? Says the Akedah Yitzhak, no! You know what's going to happen? People are going to think Avraham Avinu has gone loony and slaughtered his own son when he's been preaching for all these years that you can't do human sacrifice. And because they think he's gone loony, they won't approach him to ask about Hashem. Because why should I go to a loon and ask about Hashem? That was the most painful thing to him. Because he knew, of all humans in the world, he was the best person to ask about. Ask me about Hashem. I know him really well. And he was scared by doing this act, says the Akedah Yitzhak, by doing this act, people would no longer trust him. And because they wouldn't ask him about Hashem, they'd be closing the door to the biggest window to God consciousness there was in the world in the form of Avraham Avinu. And he said, what can I do if I do this? Nobody's going to know about Hashem. They're all going to go to Avodah Zarah. So he cried. Not for himself. Not for the loss of his son. But for the loss of people being able to find Hashem in the world. Because nobody will trust him anymore. If you cry at a loss of a gateway to Hashem, that is an atonement because it shows such a high level of faith. It's like a korban. We take from this that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken his korbanos, like the Metzaira, when he comes out of seclusion, has to give a korban. It's not over until he slaughters an animal in the Beis Hamikdash. So too, korbanos have been taken here. And the more you lament over the loss of God consciousness, the more that affects to reatone and realign you with what's real. Unfortunately, this is the jolt that was needed for the generation at hand. And it is a terrifying statement to us as to where we're holding. All I can say is may Hashem have mercy upon us and keep us safe, to because if you're dead, you can't improve. The only chance we can do to do tshuva is to live for tomorrow. That's all we can do, right? The dead can't change. So if this whole thing is about doing tshuva and getting close to Hashem, may we please God do it and justify our lives. Please God, may you all be happy, safe, well and healthy. And may you take from this the very best possible message. Improve your relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Improve your relationship with yourself. Improve your relationship with your brethren. Improve your relationship with the Gentiles. With everyone at this stage. In order to make the Kiddush Hashem that is necessary, Be'ez Hashem to bring Mashiach as a quick birth. A baby, as quick as you think about it, immediately from the birth stool, as a Kodesh Baruch Hu promises us through Yeshaya, is a possibility that he brings us to the birth stool, he will give us a son, and Be'ezus Hashem will be painless. Bimhairi v'yameinu. I wish you an amazing, amazing week.